And now, if you've ever been to the beach in the tropics, you've probably picked up these shells. You know what I'm talking about. They're cone-shaped. They're brightly colored, intricately patterned houses of, well, snails, cone snails. But if you ever find a shell with a snail inside, be very careful, because every single species of cone snail is venomous, and some of them can even kill you, stinging with harpoon-like appendages. My next guest doesn't run away from them. She collects these snails with, how she uses, salad tongs and scuba gloves, right?
That's correct.
And studies their venom. Why? Because hidden in these deadly venoms, she says, are compounds you might be able to use to treat chronic pain, even cancer. And she can't wait to jump into the conversation. Mandy Halford is with me. She's Associate Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry at Hunter College and a Research Fellow at the American Museum of Natural History here in New York. Welcome, Mandy.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Ira.
Tell me how you pick these up. With the tongs?
With the tongs, very carefully. What's nice is that the snails are not aggressive. So when you pick them up, they recoil into their shell. It's only when they feel threatened that they'll bring out the harpoon and try to envenomate you.
We have a video of some of these snails in action. You can check that out on our website at sciencefriday.com/killersnails. It's part of our breakthrough series in collaboration with the Howard Hughes Medical Institution. And I mentioned the video of the work just now. It has some terrifying shots of snails hunting for food, but they're swallowing fish whole?
Completely.
Wow, they don't chew them. They just go.
No, chew them. Take them all in like a child.
What size fish are we talking?
They can swallow something their body size. And so they're not afraid to go out there. Well, actually, what they do is kind of cool. They have a siphon, which is kind of like a sniffer, a nose.
Right.
So they can smell if there's prey in the water. If they think there's game to be had, then they'll let out their proboscis, which is like a tongue. On the tip of the tongue is a harpoon, which they'll then inject into the fish. And then they open their mouth, the rostrum, really wide and swallow and engulf the whole thing.
So is it dead before it's eaten because of venom?
No. What the venom is doing, it's shutting down the physiological function of the fish. So it's not dead, but it's paralyzed. It's going into what we call excitotic shock sometimes, and then it gets swallowed whole. It's like the worst death you could imagine. There's no escape.
Gosh, I see the movie right now.
Yeah.
Now, I know you're studying the potential drug applications of these poisons. Why are they such good candidates?
They're great candidates for drugs because the venom itself is very potent. It acts very fast, and it's very specific. So those are all the ingredients you look for when you're making a drug. And evolutionarily, over time, venom is sort of the result of an evolution's arm race. And so they're using biochemical warfare to perfect what they need to do. And what they need to do is to either subdue a prey or defend themselves. And venom peptides, so the venom itself is not one thing, it's several things. There are these peptides and proteins, which are very specific for hitting certain targets in the physiological system of their prey and also the physiological system of humans. And that's why they're such good drugs, because they can be very specific for specific targets.
So you talk about using them for what kinds of things might we use them?
Well, actually, what's a really nice story is you can use right now, there's a drug from cone snails that could be used to treat the opioid epidemic that's happening.
No kidding.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
It's called ziconotide, and it's the first drug from the cone snails. And it's used to treat right now chronic pain in HIV and cancer patient. It has one serious drawback in its delivery. It has to be delivered via spinal tap. But it's 1,000 times more potent than morphine. And more importantly, it doesn't work. It doesn't cause addiction, right?
Oh.
Because it doesn't work on the opioid receptor. It works on iron channels. So these are sort of like gates on your
right.
on cells. And because of that difference, we can avoid altogether the addictive process that happens when you prescribe opioids and other for treating pain.
So if you could get it either simple injectable or set your neck or oral, that would be the trick.
Exactly. And that's sort of what we're working on, too. We're devising this Trojan horse, as I like to call it, that would shuttle the peptide. So the big thing about ziconotide is it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier, and that's why you need to have the spinal tap, so it's delivered directly into your central nervous system. And so what we're trying to do is make this sort of Trojan horse nanocontainer to shuttle the peptide across the blood-brain barrier and get it to where it needs to go.
You know, we've done programs about other kinds of venoms from snakes and even spiders we've talked about.
Yeah.
This is a whole new thing.
This is different.
Different kind of venom here.
Different kind of venom, but similar. So again, because they've evolved over time, we found that venom is actually convergent. That means nature has done this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And we've seen venom evolve in over 90 different animals. But because venom is genetic, it's encoded, so it can be shared by animals, as opposed to poison, right?
Ah,
so poison,
difference.
Very different. Poison is usually sequestered or eaten, like poison dart frogs. They themselves are not dangerous, but it's what they eat that makes them so lethal. And so with venom, you have something genetically coded that can be traced throughout time and evolution and passed from one animal to another. And so while the venom from snails is slightly different from venom from snakes, they have similar components.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI Public Radio International. Talking with Mandy Hulford about killer snail venom.
Killer
snails. How did you get interested? How did you get interested in this?
I saw that video of a snail eating a fish from Toto Oliveira, who I like to call the godfather of snails. So he's been working with snail venom for past 30, 40 years now. He's from the Philippines. And a lot of Filipino fishermen were dying in the 70s, and they weren't sure why. And it was because these snails were getting caught in the fishing nets. And when the guys went in to retrieve their catch, they would get harpooned. And they would fade away and die. So there's no anti-venom. So killer snails really means killer snails.
Really? And what about cancer research? Anything you could use the venom?
So this is a really new exciting thing for how we can use venom to treat cancer. And it's because, like I was talking about the channels on cells, tumor cells have channels that are usually specific compared to normal cells. And so these peptides are very good at targeting the channels on tumor cells that are not on normal cells and or are upregulated on tumor cells compared to normal cells. And it's the specificity, again, of the peptides because, again, they've been evolved for years to be able to do what they do. And their specificity for particular targets means that we can now use them to treat cancer in that they would target tumor cells to shut down things like proliferation or vascularization, bringing blood vessels to the tumors that lead to it being able to propagate.
I see you don't get very excited about this.
Just a little.
Now, but I know. I see that you also teach a course in science diplomacy here in New York. What does that got to do with killer snails?
It has everything to do with killer snails. So we go out on expeditions to collect the snails in Papua New Guinea or Indo-Pacific in Panama. And to do that, you need to do permits. You have to deal with a lot of governance in the foreign countries to allow you, first of all, to be able to go, and then second, to be able to bring back samples with you. And in order to do that, scientists have to work on a level that they normally don't want to work with, which is bureaucracy.
Right. But they're used to filling out paperwork.
We have to. We're used to filling out paperwork. But it's important because, like, for example, things like when we want to be able to access and gain, but if we were to find something like this drug, Ziconotide, it came from the Philippines, but it was developed all here in the States. So who should benefit from that, right? Should it be
intellectual property question?
And so these are the kinds of issues we talk about in science diplomacy. So your science, while it might have a very local immediate action at the bench, it can have very wide global reach and implications. And from everything from drug development to global health.
I'm holding a snail shell in my hand. It's very heavy. It's a pretty big shell. So where would I find this around?
What you're holding is a terebrid snail, and this one you would find in the Indo-Pacific, mostly in the Philippines. They're that big in the Philippines usually.
It's 6 inches long or more than that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a heavy snail. So I don't have to worry about going to the beach here.
No, in New York you're fine. I mean, our waters are way too cold.
And
there are other reasons to not go into Coney Island waters, but not these snails.
I'm going to leave it at that before we get really in trouble. Mandy Hulford is Associate Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry at Hunter College and Research Fellow at the famous American Museum of Natural History here in New York. Thank you. This is quite fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me.
She's also featured in our latest video in our Breakthrough series produced in collaboration with the Howard Hughes Medical Institute. And you can check it out and watch this snail eat a fish. It's amazing. At sciencefriday.com/killersnails.